Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which ran on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Colonel Kevin Lauderdale. Hi, Kevin. Welcome back.
Bung chow, Rob.
Oh, please, bung chow.
That's Korean for mazel tov, I think.
I believe so. Anyway, it's great to have you back for season two of MASHcast.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
All right. I'm very excited. So we're here to talk about season two, of course, episode 27, Radar's Report, which, as we'll get to, is a very significant episode in the history of the series. The original air date was September 29th, 1973, written by Lawrence Marks and directed by Jackie Cooper. It's a week in the life, of the 477th, as explained to headquarters by Radar via his weekly report. Amid the maddeningly complex details and formalities Radar has to use to describe what happened, we learn that while operating on a wounded North Korean soldier, the soldier got loose, grabbed the scalpel, and tries to escape. In the melee, he knocks over an IV stand for a patient trapper is working on, contaminating the whole field. After slashing a new nurse, Lieutenant Johnson, played by Joan Van Ark, the soldier is distracted by Klinger after he bursts in long enough for Hawkeye to get the knife away from him. Trapper is furious that his patient is not recovering well and is angry that the North Korean. Hawkeye tries to talk him down, explaining how brainwashed the North Korean soldiers are, filled with stories about torture and abuse at the hands of U.S. doctors. Meanwhile, after a nasty run-in with Klinger, Frank demands that Henry get Klinger shipped out of the unit. Henry orders an official psychiatric evaluation, and Dr. Milton Friedman, Alan Arbus, arrives to do the examination. Major Friedman is more than a little irritated. He came all the way out to the front to examine a guy in a dress. At the same time, Hawkeye has fallen head over heels in love with Lieutenant Johnson and puts the moves on her, but he backs off abruptly when he sees her wedding ring. Lieutenant Johnson reveals that the wedding ring is a blind used to keep hordes of lecherous men away. Hawkeye is thrilled at the news and gets in way over his head, suggesting they walk off hand in hand down the aisle. After Trapper's patient dies, Trapper makes his way to the North Korean's tent and seems prepared to murder the wounded man in his bed. Hawkeye comes in behind him and quietly talks him down. Later in the swamp, Lieutenant Johnson meets up with Hawkeye. While she likes him a lot, she feels this is all moving too fast. She tells Hawkeye she has no interest in marriage to anyone, which breaks Hawkeye's heart. She then tells Hawkeye she's being shipped out to Tokyo in the morning. Later, we get to hear what Major Friedman concludes, that Corporal Klinger is a transvestite and a homosexual. Klinger is aghast at this, and says he just wants a Section 8. Major Friedman basically says take it or leave it, and Klinger leaves it. But he forgets his purse, which Major Friedman cheerfully hands to him. Radar finishes his report and hands it to Henry to sign. So, Kevin, the big thing of this episode is, of course, an introduction of a new character to the show.
Milton! Everybody loves Milton! Yay! Milton! That would, of course, be Sidney Friedman before they change his name to something more psychological, I guess, and going along with that'll be Sigmund, because Sidney later on writes a Dear Sigmund letter. I love this episode because I think of it as Radar's Dear I-Corps letter.
Mm-hmm.
Got Dear Dad, Dear Peg, Dear Comrade, Dear Uncle Abdul. The only person who really didn't get to write a letter was Margaret. God, I would have loved a Dear Donald letter.
That would have been amazing.
Where she interprets everything from her point of view. This episode is fantastic. It has got so much stuff going on. It's got Hawkeye in love, and we can talk about whether this is really a side of Hawkeye we just never see or a weirdly written episode. It's got some knockout Wayne Rogers stuff. He runs the gamut from smiley, happy, amazed to nearly murderous. If those out there who like Little Beefcake, it's got some Trapper with his shirt off. It's got the introduction of Dr. Friedman. It's got a Valentino reference. I got to talk more about that at the very end of the show. This episode has got so much, and it's funny, of course, but I love the idea of Radar. It opens up with him like in his little room. He sleeps in the office. We know that. He's got his teddy bears set up. He's typing up his weekly report. I like the idea he set aside a special time for this, for him to sit around and think about it when no one else is going to disturb him. He's typing up the letter, and we have sort of his gloss on some of it. Like there's a reference to, nurse recuperating under personal supervision of Dr. Pierce. And he thinks, it's personal supervision. I have a question for you, which I don't want you to answer just yet. At the very beginning, when the Radar's typing, Hawkeye shows up with a girl who we don't see. And Hawkeye asks for the keys to the linen closet. I guess he's
right.
going to make out with her. My question is, don't answer it yet, who is that girl?
Okay.
So I think we can talk around a few things. But let's move our way through to, I guess, it starts with the introduction of Erica Johnson, the nurse, and the Chinese prisoner being operated on.
Can I do need to say, I think it's very funny that you said that Hawkeye's going to the supply closet to make out with the nurse. That's very cute, Kevin.
They're going to snog for our British listeners.
They're going to read a book together. This episode, it is a dear episode. You know, I mean, it's just a different format, but it's a great way to bring it in because you have to hear all the kind of military doublespeak that Radar has to do with the semi, you know, comma, Korean prisoner, comma, North Korean, comma, hostile, comma. You know, like it would just like imagine having to write this monster every week. It would drive you insane.
So we go in and we meet Erica Johnson, played by Joan Van Ark. And first of all, I'm always surprised when I see it's this one. There's a handful of episodes where Hawkeye's trying to make time with a new nurse, and I'm always afraid, is this the episode where she turns out to be a racist? This isn't that one, so like, thank God. Although that episode has a great denouement. But she's in there, and I like her because she has, I guess what we now call agency. You know, Hawkeye's putting the moves on her, and she's like, yeah, sure. I don't mind. Yeah, am I good to go? Sure. Yeah. She's not just some put-upon young thing. And I wonder if maybe that attracts Hawkeye to her all the more so that she seems strong. We'll see her a lot stronger later on. When the Chinese prisoner regains consciousness and breaks out, there's these wonderful reaction shots. Yay, Jackie Coogan, which remind me actually of like Hitchcock's The Birds. If you remember at the end of The Birds, when there's always like just frozen reaction shots of people looking outside the window as birds are attacking at the, I guess it's the gas station or the cafe. And they're the same sort of reaction shots as violence is happening in this episode. It's like lock on Nurse Kelly and a couple other people for a second. Lock on Hawkeye for a couple of seconds. Very nicely directed. We talked about Jackie before. He does a really good job of directing these episodes.
Yeah, he was a solid director. I mean, I loved him as an actor, of course. I know him as Perry White, things like that. But yeah, he does a great job here. Yeah, the scene where the North Korean soldier, by the way, she played by an actor named Derek Shimatsu, who didn't have that many credits. He was in a movie called Varan the Unbelievable, which sounds fantastic. It sounds like a sci-fi movie. And then he was in Twin Peaks in the 90s, which is like a weird, like not many credits between this and then the Twin Peaks. But I love the way this is shot. The sort of rapid close-ups as we're getting closer. And really has that wonderful feeling of tension. It's very, very well done by Jackie Cooper.
And Nurse Johnson shows not only agency, but bravery. She's the one.
Yeah, she's gutsy, yeah.
She's approaching me. And meanwhile, in the background, for those who didn't get the opening joke, Father Mulcahy is trying to bring peace and love. Like, Bung Chao, please, Bung Chao. Bung Chao supposedly means like peace and friendship, right?
Supposedly, yes, but it doesn't.
We find out later on it means something else. She's a wonderful, strong nurse character. And in the end, she just gets, as you say, winged. Like her arm gets cut, and Ted ends up, she ends up spending a week in bed. So I'm not quite sure about that, but...
Yeah, I mean, I said the thing where she's approaching, and it's these back and forths where she's like, it's okay, it's all right, calm down. Yeah, I mean, you could see why Hawkeye would take a shine to her. I mean, I do ultimately find this episode feels like it's one of those episodes just out of character continuity. Because, I mean, yeah, Hawkeye really likes her, but, I mean, he's ready to propose marriage. That seems a little like, what? Since when does Hawkeye ever do that?
You know, especially since he himself later on says at the end of the episode, oh, the shoe's been on the other foot. Oh, how many times have I told other nurses, other ladies, I'm not ready to get married? And it turns out Nurse Johnson's not ready to get married. We're in season two, so you figure the characters would be fairly established. I'm going to leave it to the viewers to determine whether, you know, this is the one woman who absolutely captured Hawkeye's heart and so naturally totally fell in love with her, or whether just, yeah, it was poorly written and it's really not Hawkeye's character at all.
Yeah, I think it's a little – I don't want to say it's poorly written, but it's a little just not out of character. Because, I mean, later on, Hawkeye talks about when he meets up with Carly Breslin in More I See You. He says, there's been no one since you, faint copies at best. And so is he lumping Lieutenant Johnson in there with that, or the continuity there just sort of forgetting about it? But, I mean, it works – It works within the episode, but then, you know, this context, you're like, he can't be that in love with her that quickly.
That quickly, I know, yeah.
But still, and again, I like the scene. We're jumping ahead a little, but the scene where she says, you know, I'm not interested in being married at all. That's pretty, you know, pretty heady stuff for a woman character in 1951 to say.
And it's in the great battle of the OR that Klinger's dress gets ruined. One of his shoulder straps gets cut by the communist slinging a scalpel. And just because I'm crazy, and because this is the sort of thing that's stuck in the back of my mind, one of the things Radar has to write up is a requisition to replace Klinger's dress, damaged in combat, I guess. And here's the thing. So he has to fill out a form, S427J/9. Okay. For those of you who remember my appearance, my first appearance on Tuttle, I talked about how I had a whole bunch of episodes, like, recorded. I would listen to them going to sleep and memorized. So because of that, I know that in Adam's Ribs, the rib and sauce import paperwork is an S47/19J.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of similar numbers, and because I'm totally crazy. So it's either this episode or Adam's Ribs was – Lawrence Marks, the writer, is in on both of them. Either he wrote this one by himself or he co-wrote this one. And I wondered if Lawrence Marks was – in the Army. I was actually unable to determine. I did a quick research. I don't know if Lawrence Marks was in the Army. But I wonder if there was some stupid form that everybody had to fill out that had S's and 4s and 7s and J's and 9s. And he just, like, you know, wrote that down. If you are a former Army member and you know anything about these forms, please write to us.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. We would love to hear from you. Yeah, probably a great little detail. I never really thought about that. But yeah, I love the sort of gibberish of those things. Like, it's just incredibly long and complicated. And you can imagine it's probably so easy to make a mistake, you know, to plug in the wrong thing. And, you know, you might get shipped like a tongue depressors or something instead of a dress or whatever. So.
Oh, no, not a million tongue depressors.
Yeah, not a million tongue depressors. I love the scene when Frank wanders into Margaret's tent and he starts canoodling and he doesn't realize under the hairdresser it's Klinger.
Yep. The orange copy of Sports Illustrated makes, like, its third appearance.
Yes, that one lone issue of Sports Illustrated is just making its way around the camp.
My favorite joke is in that sequence, and we'll save that for the end. We do favorite jokes. So in there, so that's what spurs, you know, our next character beat moment. That's what finally spurs Frank and Margaret to did say, we've got to get rid of Klinger. The fact that Frank bit Klinger is the inciting incident that says, we got to get rid of him. We got to do something. And so that's what brings in
Dr. Friedman, yes. I would argue probably the show's greatest creation is, I would argue, Colonel Potter. I think because it gave the show a more rounded sense of, you know, sort of fairness, because, I mean, it actually presented a military man that was you know, like, decent and not a nincompoop and stuff like that. And I think it deflects some of the criticism that MASH was so heavy-handed against the military or whatever. That said, I would say, you know, a close second is Dr. Friedman. Because, again, as we just talked about two episodes ago with Divided We Stand, they had a psychiatrist character, Dr. Hildebrand, who they could have brought back if they had wanted to. If they wanted to just make it a one joke, they could have brought Dr. Hildebrand back. But instead, they write up this new character, Dr. Friedman. And I have no idea whether Larry Gelbart intended for Dr. Friedman to be a returning character. But I have to think that if his return appearances were guaranteed by the casting of Alan Arbus, who just was so incredibly funny in the part that I would imagine you watch him do these lines and you're just like, oh, we got to bring this guy back. He's a genius.
His combination of emotion and intellect, even though this Dr. Friedman is a little cooler than emotionally cooler than we see him in some other episodes. You could make the case this is simply his first appearance at MASH, so he doesn't really know what to expect. But Arbus's portrayal of the emotion and the intellect together is fantastic. And we'll see him occurring – is he in every single season? He has a major role in the final episode.
Yeah, he makes an appearance after – he comes back obviously later on this season, and then he'll make at least one appearance every season for the rest of the series.
And I remember watching when I was younger, and it was always great. Like, oh, Sydney's going to be in this one. He's – you know, the other thing is he's not quite our connection, but he's an outsider. He's an outsider who's in – slightly inside. So our view of MASH through him is always just slightly different and slightly more engaging somehow. We just love him.
Yeah, and I said the pregnant pause that he takes where – and that's the reveal of Henry – of that Sidney – or it was Milton. I would imagine they changed the name because Milton Friedman is a famous economist at the time. Maybe they thought it was confusing that they would have Milton Friedman. The thing where he – first of all, he gets exasperated that, you know, he's like, you brought me down here to look at that. You know, first of all, he's mad about that. But then he's like, okay, it's all part of the war effort, I guess. And there's this great pause, and then he just waits, and he fills out the form, and everybody's just sitting there, and it's kind of just silent. And then he goes, okay, what's your name, honey? And just the, you're right there, you're like, okay, you immediately sense he could fit in with the rest of the gang because he has that, you know, sort of whatever the hell spirit to him. And again, I have to wonder whether how much of that was brought by Alan Arbus. I do want to mention before he got to this show, Alan Arbus had, you know, a long career. He was in a bunch of movies. He was in Cinderella Liberty. He was in Coffee, the great Pam Grier movie where he plays a pimp.
Mm-hmm. everybody, after you listen to this episode, Google Alan Arbus Coffee Pimp and see the images of the outfit he's wearing.
Oh, it's amazing. Man. Yeah, it's fantastic. He was in Greaser's Palace and the classic Putney Swope, which are both movies directed by Robert Downey Sr. So obviously he was good friends with Robert Downey Sr. because he was in both those movies. He was married to the famous photographer Diane Arbus, and that's where she got her name. That's not her original name, and she she's married to Diane Arbus. And if you really want to go dig deep, you can actually see Alan Arbus portrayed by the actor Ty Burrell from Modern Family in the movie Fur, which is about Diane Arbus. And they have Alan Arbus in the movie, so you get to see him played by Ty Burrell. His final appearance in anything was a 2000 episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And then he passed away just a couple of years ago. And I will say, about 5 years ago, I sort of had this notion of like, boy, I loved Alan Arbus so completely as a character and as an actor that I actually wanted to kind of like reach out to him because, you know, you have those things where there's somebody you really like and then you don't, you know, you hear that they've passed away and then you're like, well, now it's too late to say anything, you know, to let them know how much I like them. I actually managed to track down Alan Arbus's representatives. He still had an agency and I called them in New York and left a message just saying, hey, look, I'm a fan and I would love to, you know, talk to Al because I was talking about my MASH blog and they never got back to me. I'm sure they probably got the message and were like, what the hell is this? But at the very least, I did try because I really would have loved to have told 95-year-old Alan Arbus that you were just my favorite thing ever.
You would have liked that.
I hope so. But yeah, this is his debut. He's absolutely fantastic in the scene with Klinger. And again, it'll become a major addition to the MASH universe. And I do have to wonder, like, what was the notion of, did they always think about bringing him back? Or, you know, was this kind of a one-off and Arbus was just so funny? It's just wonderful. I love the little physical bit of business when the Jeep pulls up and he gets out of the Jeep and he's stretching. Yeah. And then there's a guy behind him doing a salute. And then when he turns around, he sees the guy saluting. He does like a little So he's like, Sidney's not – he may be a major, but he's not much of a military man.
This is an episode with lots of great exterior shots. I always love when we get to see – they actually filmed up at the ranch. And we see the actual mountains, not the paintings and things like that. And it leads to one of my favorite bits. Wayne Rogers rocks in this episode.
Yes, he does.
He gets to play – serious and, as I said, almost comedic and happy. There's this wonderful turn very soon where Trapper thinks his patient is going to do better. And he and Hawkeye are sitting out in the sun and they're drinking martinis. And Trapper is so happy and you really get the infectious joy from him. And then all of a sudden Radar comes up and says things are going so well. And I was never that big a Wayne Rogers fan. But in this episode, seeing him go from that to what we'll talk about shortly, which is the, you know, he's so upset with the Korean soldier who, you know, whose actions have resulted in almost the death and eventually the death of his patient, is so dark and heavy. This gives me new respect for Wayne Rogers watching this episode.
Yeah, this episode features that remarkable scene is something we really haven't seen before on the show. Before we get to that, though, because we have another romantic scene between Lieutenant Johnson and Hawkeye, and it features a great little kind of retroactive, almost like a no prize, because at one point during their canoodling, the lights dim. We see the lights kind of like flicker a little, and it's like, what is that about? And what happened was, apparently, while they were filming the scene, the generator for the actual stage shorted out a little, and they couldn't reshoot it, and so they had to patch it, and they had a voiceover from the PA person saying, "Hey everybody, the 477 generator's out. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal." And that was how the patch was. It was like they wrote it as if it was intentional.
Mm.
But it's the strangest thing, because you just see the lights dim all of a sudden, and neither Hawkeye or Lieutenant Johnson respond to it. But nevertheless, it happens.
Acting.
Yeah, I know, and I didn't know that until I saw it on apparently in an alt-tv.mash news group. Larry Gelbart himself posted that in 1999.
Wow.
Which I love the idea that, like, kind of old guy Larry Gelbart was around on the internet posting things about MASH.
When Hawkeye is, quote-unquote, treating Nurse Johnson, I just want to point out that she is the one who guides the stethoscope. She has all of the agency and control and command in their relationship. And I actually knew a girl in college who wore a wedding ring, and she was not married. And I never asked her, "Did you get this idea from MASH?" But I know, I said, "Oh, you're usually rather young to be married." And she says, "Like, yeah, I just wear this to, like, you know, keep away the creeps and stuff like that." And if I thought, I would have asked her, "Did you get that idea from MASH?"
It's a fun idea.
Yeah, Erica says that. So it seems it's like cuts down wrestling matches or something like that. And Hawkeye falls for it.
I do want to ask you something, Kevin. I found right after that scene where they're about to operate on the North Korean soldier, and Margaret comes in and says, you know, "It's not necessary, he passed away." The scrub sinks, they are in this scene, they are back to back. So when Hawkeye and Trapper are talking to one another, they're facing each other. I think every time you see the scrub sinks, they're in a different position. Sometimes they're up against the fourth wall. Sometimes they're up against each other. Like, they keep moving around. You would think that they would not be moving around all the time. But I have to figure they were portable. And I guess however the director wanted to do the shot, that's how they were arranged.
That's a great idea. I would think of them as side by side, because it's usually two people talking with, right, like a nurse in between them, you know, assisting with the scrub or putting on the gloves or things like that. So I imagine they were portable. You know, God, again, once again, we've talked about in other shows, if we should go back in time, I'd love to wander around the set of MASH.
Oh, yeah.
See just where things were, how things were moved around, how things were taken down, repurposed, stripped here and there.
I mean, again, it's meant to be portable, so, yep, you know, meant to be mobile, I should say. Not, it's not PASH, it's MASH. So then the next scene after Trapper's patient dies is the one where the North Korean soldier is in a tent by himself,
yeah,
which is weird. I don't know why. I'm guessing it's because they're worried he might attack the other soldiers, maybe. I mean, I think you could strap him down like they did in later episodes. But yeah, here he's got his own tent, and Trapper wanders in, and you get the sense that Trapper is, you know, at the very least thinking of doing this soldier in. And that's when Hawkeye comes in and sort of talks him down. And it's an extraordinary moment for them to suggest that one of our heroes might murder a patient in cold blood. It's a pretty gutsy thing.
Once again, MASH taking the serious side of war someplace you ordinarily wouldn't see it on television. Trapper's up there, and he's like, "Yeah, you getting that good medicine you need? You bet. All I got to do is maybe pinch off this little hose, maybe, and you wouldn't get it, and then you just die." I mean, you just said, to have the hero of a comedy show seen theoretically contemplating murder is the sort of thing that would have driven the suits at the television network insane. I'm surprised they got away with this. But Hawkeye comes in and just quietly, calmly says, "Hey, Trap, that's not what we're about."
Yep. Yeah, it's a really wonderful moment. And when we get to the favorite line part of the episode, the scene is going to come back into play. But yeah, it's a really wonderful moment. And like I said, it's Wayne Rogers, of course, famously complained that he didn't get enough to do on the show, which is why he eventually left after the third season. And there are certainly some great examples. In fact, the very next episode of the show is a big moment for Trapper getting shunted aside. But nevertheless, here he gets – I mean – one of the complaints, I guess, about Hawkeye and Trapper was that they were much closer in their behavior in terms of you know, how they acted versus Hawkeye and BJ. And of course, when you had Hawkeye and BJ, it had much more contrast. But here, I mean, this is very much a different thing, is that Hawkeye is the most committed to never causing harm ever for any reason under any circumstances. But not all the doctors always feel that way. And that's how angry Trapper could get. I mean, you know, that's a nice thing for him to play. And I hope Rodgers at least appreciated that, hey, I'm giving something really kind of meaty here.
He's getting finally a serious dramatic moment. Yeah, Frank is always, I don't remember if it's in this episode or other episodes you're going to cover later on, where he's concerned about the order of operations, where it's like, should be Americans first, then allies, then the enemy. Whereas when the enemy comes in, Hawkeye is like, just fix him now. He's the one who's most wounded. Trapper is a really complex character. He, a lot more so than I ever really caught first time around when I was 10, 11, 12. He's married. He loves his wife. There's an episode where he's like, we can adopt this kid. That's going to be him later on. And yeah, he's constantly fooling around with other women. He drinks so much, develops some biological problems. He's ready to commit murder. If I'm not mistaken, Trapper is, I think, the hero of the novel, isn't he? He's like the primary character of the novel.
Yeah, much like the movie. He's ostensibly the main character, yeah.
So yay for Wayne Rogers. In this episode, at least, he got to do some real acting.
Yeah, it's a terrific, terrific moment. So the episode ends with Hawkeye and Lieutenant Johnson deciding they're really not going to stay together. She's going to be shipped out. And it ends with Radar finishing his report. So, yeah, I mean, overall, what do you think of this episode?
This is a good episode. It's got some great dramatic beats to it. It introduces a character who was going to be one of the most lovable characters of all time, Sydney. It's still really funny. It's got a lot going for it. And when Erica Johnson comes to visit Hawkeye in the swamp to tell him goodbye, she says, oh, this is the swamp. And Hawkeye says, yes, we haven't changed a thing since Valentino died. And for those of you who are younger listeners, I just have to point this out. Valentino was the heartthrob star of the silent movie age. He was the prototype Latin lover. Actually, he was sort of a swarthy lover. He frequently played a sheik and things like that. But the cliche of Valentino's death is something that was just so permeated 30s, 40s, and 50s culture. There's another episode where I think it's where Colonel Potter's grandson is born.
Yes, yes.
And he says, you know, my own wife went into labor as soon as she heard Valentino died.
Yeah. They got a lot of mileage out of that.
Supposedly it triggered waves of suicides among young women who were heartbroken. It is a fact that 100,000 people lined the streets of New York when his funeral cortege went by. And just the idea, there's like, you would hear in the 50s people talking about, you know, I had an aunt. She's worn nothing but black ever since Valentino died. It just became a thing. And I could not let this episode go by without commenting on it because it's such a peculiar and amazing element.
That's a great detail. I love that. Yeah. So do you have a particular favorite line from this episode?
Yes. And it's when Klinger is in Margaret's tent doing his hair, and Frank comes in and, you know, bites him on the neck. Then later on, Frank calls him a pervert. And Klinger says, pervert? Who bit who, Major?
And he's not there by permission. Like, that was the thing. Like, Margaret doesn't know that he's there. He's just using her hairdryer under his own, you know, of his own volition.
It's the war. We all have to pitch in together. That's which right. was more of a World War II concept than it was the Korean police action.
Yes.
Concept.
My favorite line, actually, and I kind of hate to do this because, well, I'll get to it in a second, but it's the scene in the tent with the soldier where Trapper comes in and you see Hawkeye come in. And this is really well shot by Jackie Cooper, where the camera is focused on Trapper. And we see in the background a door open, with the door open, and we see what's clearly Hawkeye come in, but it's out of focus. So we kind of just know, all right, we already know, we can tell by just the general shape and the hair color and the smock that it's Hawkeye. And we hear him say, Trapper, and then there's no response. And then there's a beat, and he just says really quietly, Trap. And I love the way Alan Alda does that read. And I hate giving that scene, the favorite line from that scene, which is a great Trapper scene, to Alan Alda, but I can't help it. I just love the way he just lowers his voice a little and just says it even more gently, because that's how much of a zone Trapper is in, where he just says, Trap? Like, he's really trying to be as gentle as possible. Again, I don't know if that's in the script or that was just Alan Alda's read on it, but there's just something about the way that instead of, I mean, because of course your natural inclination is if you say something to someone, you're like, hey, Joe, and they don't hear you, your inclination is to say it louder. You know, like they didn't hear me, Joe. Hey, Joe, like that thing. But instead, Hawkeye does it the other way, and he quiets it down. Like he knows how delicate this moment is, and he doesn't want to like almost shock Trapper too heavily. So he just has that little quiet trap to it. I absolutely love it. I think it's just a riveting scene.
That's that sensitive new age guy from the 70s, you know, filtered through Hawkeye. The one other thing I wanted to point out, I don't usually notice the music, but again, this is Radar's report. He's in his room. There's a cute little scene where he feeds he's got coffee and he feeds his teddy bear a sip of coffee. And at the end of that scene, as they fade to black, the music cue is a wind-up music box version of Suicide is Painless.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, go back and listen to that. That's one of the more unusual interpretations of the theme I really enjoy.
That's really cool. All right. So now, guys, we're wrapping up here. Now, who is this nurse that that we never see that Hawkeye is going to make kissy face with in this place?
Well, that's what I want to know. Okay, so here's the situation. Radar is writing up the report. So the question is that still Nurse Johnson? Because she hasn't left yet. She's leaving the next morning. Or is she somebody new? Because Trapper says to him, oh, well, you know, you struck out with Nurse Johnson, you move on to somebody else. That's just the way it goes. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is it Nurse Johnson for one last fling? We'll always have the linen closet. Or has Hawkeye moved on to somebody else? I don't know.
That's you know what? I never even thought about that. I think I'm gonna put my money on that it's a new nurse that he has already moved on and he's just now onto another fling. That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
That would be the Hawkeye we all know and love.
That's right. So, yeah, like I said, so Raiders Report. It's quietly a very memorable episode because of course it gave us Sidney Friedman, who is again one of the great characters in all of I'd say TV history. Just one of the most unique, interesting, and funny characters. And this is the beginning. This is the expansion of the MASH universe. You know, as more and more characters come in, and this would just be a huge, huge addition to the show. And otherwise said, it's a really great show. It's got some wonderful moments. Joan Van Ark, who of course went on to a long career on Dallas and Knots Landing. By the way, in Geek Circle, she was the voice of Spider Woman on the animated TV series. That's her probably big geek cred. So she went on to have a really nice career. This is early on for her. Like I said, it's also a very solid episode.
And Hawkeye brews up some Chateau Hawkeye.
51.
I always wondered, they're drinking stuff out of martini glasses, but we see a Hawkeye coloring it. So I think they're just making pure distilled alcohol. And once again, is it out of cabbage? Is he making kimchi martinis? He's distilling it, and he's like, should I add red or should I add white?
Yeah.
So he makes his own – they make their own drinks, and then they add just a little bit of flavor and a little bit of color. It's amazing what you can do to pass the time in Korea.
I love that he puts it in the bottle, but there's only like a third – enough to fill a bottle. So he's gonna go to Lieutenant Johnson with a third of a bottle of wine, ostensibly. Like, oh, wow, how delicious.
That's class.
That's class. So, well, again, that's going to do it for Radar's Report. Kevin, thank you once again. You know I always enjoy talking to you. This is always so much fun. So thank you for coming back for season two.
Thank you for having me on. I love this show. And I really – the fact that you've brought it about, you've created it, has inspired me to go back and rewatch episodes of MASH on Hulu. Yay, straight through, not just whatever I get randomly on MeTV. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me at kevinlauderdale.livejournal.com. You can also find me on another network called the Chronic Rift Network, where I do a twice-a-month podcast called Presenting the Transcription Feature, where I bring about – where I bring back – old radio shows from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, some drama, some comedy, some quizzes, and I provide just a little bit of annotation up front so that when the jokes come along, like about Valentino being dead, you'll be able to laugh along and get the joke without me spoiling the humor.
Awesome. And so we will have that link in the show notes, of course. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you want to subscribe to the show, you can go to iTunes or on Stitcher, and you can find back episodes of the show in any of those places, plus on our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And we're always talking MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH477cast. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Until the next episode, that is all.
Okay, okay. It's all part of the war, I guess. I have a few questions to ask you. Sit down, soldier.
Yes, sir.
Now, what's your name, honey?